I'd like to welcome everyone and to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Anita Kirkulis from University of Pittsburgh. She is the Chief of the Division of Minimally Invasive Surgery, Director of the SAGES Fellowship Program, and also the co-director of the University of Pittsburgh Surgical Outcomes Research Center, a well-funded investigator who I'm sure we've all seen her many pivotal trials.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Welcome, everybody. I'm going to be talking about the impact of bariatric surgery on type 2 diabetes and weight. This is my only commercial disclosure. And these are the most recent CDC data showing trends in obesity prevalence among adults. You can see a rise in adults to almost 40% and young people at 18.5%. And this shows sort of the global picture as well. Notice that the United States is in the highest percentage, but the United States is not only number 4 among the American continents, but this is a global epidemic. So my goal in the next 20 minutes is to provide the background, the clinical context for what we're going to hear about translational research in this field. So I'm going to talk to you about the results of metabolic and bariatric surgery. I'm sure everyone in the room knows there are 4 current procedures for metabolic and bariatric surgery. But there has been a profound shift in procedures. This is the most recent data from the ASMBS showing that as of last year, almost 60% of cases in the United States are sleeve gastrectomy. So what I'm going to try to do is talk a little bit about the evolution of what has really been almost a mountain of evidence that has been produced in the last 10 to 15 years. I'm going to talk about the evolution, summarize the current evidence, and then highlight some issues for further study. So it really goes back very many years. This was a case report out of the Bronx VA where 3 patients who underwent a gastric resection for duodenal ulcer disease saw amelioration of their diabetes. And here is the most important first case series in bariatric surgery, and I've always loved the title of this paper. Over 600 patients in North Carolina that underwent an open Greenville gastric bypass. They had excellent follow-up because they were in a rural area with very little migration. And what this study showed was that weight loss was significant and durable after gastric bypass surgery. In addition, it was one of the first large series that showed very rapid improvement in diabetes after gastric bypass. Patient number 1 is graphed here. Their blood sugar before surgery was over 400 and was down in the controlled range by 6 days after surgery off of all insulin. In addition, over 90% of the people in this case series that had type 2 diabetes or impaired glucose tolerance saw resolution with gastric bypass. So this slide summarizes what I'm going to call the older studies. Excuse me, Dr. Pores and Dr. Buchwald, for addressing you that way. You can see that they're arranged here chronologically from 1995 through 2009, and you can see the case series get bigger, and then we have the very important Buchwald meta-analyses. Another old study that we must cover is one that started in Sweden in 1987, the Swedish Obese Subject Study, or SOS study. This was a matched cohort study where surgical patients and their non-surgical controls were matched on 18 different variables. This has been one of the most productive studies in bariatric surgery, still publishing results of over 20-year results. Just a reminder that most patients in SOS had a vertical banded gastroplasty, an operation no longer done. Only 13% had a gastric bypass. And what you see here is the weight loss over 20 years. Look at the gastric bypass green line at the bottom. This is very traditional gastric bypass weight loss, but note at 20 years, there were only 13 people making up that weight loss graph. What they did show was here's looking at diabetes remission over 15 years, the control group in blue, the surgery group in gold. You can see remission of 72% at 2 years, down to 30% at 15 years. But here we see in patients with diabetes that at 20 years, the cumulative incidence of cardiovascular events, heart attack and stroke over 20 years, was markedly reduced in the surgical patients compared to the control. So in summary, after bariatric surgery, we see a decline in remission over time. At 20 years that I didn't show you, the remission rate is down to 80%. But in spite of this considerable biochemical relapse, surgery was still associated with marked reduced incidence of cardiovascular and other diabetes complications. Also note the importance of BMI. Large weight losses at 2 years were also associated with high remission rate of diabetes at 2 years and with lower relapse rates later on. And in addition, baseline BMI was not related to two-year remission or to later relapse. They also showed in SOS that there was an impact on the new cases of diabetes. So this shows an 80% risk reduction in SOS of people that did not have diabetes and did not develop it over time. And finally, the primary outcome of SOS was to look at all-cause mortality. And when you compare the surgical group to the control group, there was a 29% risk reduction in all-cause mortality. Another important longitudinal study in bariatric surgery is the longitudinal assessment of bariatric surgery, or LABS. It was carried out in 10 hospitals and 6 clinical centers all around the United States. This was an observational cohort study of adults with no control group who underwent bariatric surgery between the years of 2005 and 2009, so before the surge of the sleeve gastrectomy. LABS contributions were short-term safety and also looking at long-term safety and efficacy, and I'm going to talk a little bit about those results. LABS was also the mother for the Teen LABS study, which is an ongoing study following teenagers undergoing bariatric surgery. This was the 3-year paper following LABS. There's nothing terribly exciting here. It confirms that the gold line, the band patients, lost half as much weight on average compared to bypass participants who lost a little over 30% at 3 years. So that wasn't interesting. But what we did look at that time frame was we looked at individual paths to weight loss and found there was huge variability. So we grouped everybody in LABS by their similar weight loss, and we found these weight loss trajectories. And you can see that there's very consistent weight loss in the first half of a year, but then divergence of weight loss trajectories over time, highlighting the variability. So it sort of begs the question, these trajectories, what are the clinical predictors of weight loss response after bariatric surgery or after gastric bypass? And we were hopeful in LABS that we may be able to identify preoperative factors because we looked at hundreds of them. And I'll cut to the main conclusion. Very few baseline variables were associated with 3-year weight change, and the effects were very small. So for example, if you were a smoker, you lost 2% more weight. If you had diabetes, you lost about 2.5% less weight. So these results were a little discouraging, because we couldn't identify baseline variables that were predictive of successful weight loss. But we didn't lose hope. We looked after surgery because LABS studied a lot of behaviors, and the list on the right shows 25 modifiable practices or behaviors like weight loss practices, alcohol, smoking, and eating behaviors. And what we found in the over 1,500 bypass cases was that 3 behaviors together explained about 16% of the variability in weight loss after bypass. And they include things that make sense, like weighing yourself weekly, stopping eating when you're feeling full. So if somebody did all of these behaviors, they lost about 14% more weight than people who made no positive changes. And they even did better and lost more weight than people that started with positive habits. So LABS had very consistent in-person follow-up over 7 years, and this shows you the 7-year weight loss results in LABS, showing that there was very little weight gain from 3 to 7 years, about 2% in the bands and about 4% in bypass patients. LABS also showed at the 7-year time point that the prevalence of comorbid conditions was significantly lower after gastric bypass surgery, shown here. Diabetes, lipids, and hypertension were all lower at 7 years compared to baseline. When we looked in LABS specifically at diabetes remission, the green bars here show remission of disease, and the tiny little red bars show incidence of disease. And the definition of diabetes remission in LABS was a hemoglobin A1C less than 6.5 on no medications. You can see the durability of diabetes remission at 60% at 7 years. So there have been other longitudinal studies, and this is the Utah Obesity Study, and this was an important study, is an important study, because it studies bypass, but it has 2 control groups. Control group 1 were people seeking surgery, control group 2 were just severely obese adults, and you can see their endpoints were weight loss, diabetes, and others. At 6 years, the Utah Obesity Study had very good retention rates. The weight loss at 6 years in bypass patients was 28%, remarkably close to the LABS results. The diabetes remission rate was 62%, also remarkably close, and incidence of new diabetes cases were low. The 12-year results from the Utah obesity study are shown here, and you can see that at 12 years, the majority of people after bypass maintained about 27% of their baseline weight loss. But look at that variability with those blue dots scattered all over the map at 12 years. In addition, here is shown different comorbid health conditions, and you can see that there's durable remission of most of them, 51% remission of diabetes at 12 years, and note that remission was strongly predicted by baseline medication status, such that people who were on insulin experienced less remission than people who were not, and excellent remission of the lipids, less so for hypertension due to the aging effect. What are other important long-term studies in bariatric surgery? This and the next couple of slides will show some work from the group at the U.S. Veterans Administration hospitals. These studies are important because they're a different type of bariatric cohort. These are mostly men, their mean age is a little higher, and their comorbid health burden is high. The first study I'm showing you the results of here are a large study comparing a non-surgical control to gastric bypass for weight loss at 10 years, and you can see there was 21% more weight loss in the bypass group compared to the control group. Then they looked at procedure-specific differences in weight loss, and here you see at 4 years difference in weight loss between band at the top, sleeve in the middle, and bypass at the bottom. You can see here this was one of the first studies that showed there was about a 10% difference in bypass and sleeve weight loss at 4 years. This is shown a similar result shown graphically. These bar graphs show over years 1 to 4, the number of people that lost and kept off more than 20% of their baseline weight. And you can see at each year, those numbers were higher in gastric bypass people than in gastric sleeve. This is the VA mortality study, and here we see that at 10 years, mortality rates, this is surgery compared to control group now, at 10 years, mortality rates were about 14% for the surgical group and almost 24% for the control group. So what about clinical predictors for diabetes response? What have we learned? Most of the work here has been done after gastric bypass surgery, and there are two studies circled in the middle that were models to predict factors associated with remission, diarem and ABCD. And in general, those factors include, before surgery, younger age, one study identified lower BMI, lower A1C, fewer medication use and no insulin use, higher C-peptide levels, and shorter duration of disease were associated with better remission. And postoperatively, the only factor identified consistently was the magnitude of weight loss. So we seem to know more about bypass at this point than we do about gastric sleeve. This is a fairly new study out of labs showing a matched comparison between people who underwent sleeve and people who underwent gastric bypass. I'll point out at the bottom it's a small number of sleeve patients in the labs cohort, but they were well matched to gastric bypass participants. And at 7 years, sleeve participants lost significantly less weight loss than gastric bypass. There were no significant differences, though, in comorbid improvements over time. There have also been a couple of important randomized trials, both published in JAMA in 2018, looking at the comparison between gastric sleeve and gastric bypass. This is the Sleeve Pass study. It was multi-center, conducted in Finland. 121 sleeve and 119 bypass participants, and they were compared solely on percentage excess weight loss at 5 years. And here you see that comparison. Bypass participants lost 57% compared to sleeve at 49%, so only an 8% difference, and that was not considered significant based on their pre-specified equivalence margins. But when you go from all patients in the study to just those patients with diabetes, there was a significant difference in weight loss. Almost 12% more weight loss for bypass compared to sleeve in patients with diabetes. The second randomized trial comparing sleeve and bypass is called the SM-BOSS study. It was also multi-center, and it was done in Switzerland, so a little over 100 in each bypass and sleeve groups. This shows sleeve gastrectomy, and the gray lines show everybody in the study, and the average weight loss was about 61% excess BMI percent. They also noted at the bottom you see that gastric reflux worsened more after sleeve, 32%, compared to bypass, 6%. The weight loss was not significantly different from gastric bypass weight loss, which was 68% of excess BMI loss. And they did find, too, that in terms of reoperations and reinterventions, the most common were internal hernias after gastric bypass, 22% compared to 16% with sleeve. So randomized controlled trials are very challenging in bariatric surgery, and about 8 to 10 years ago, there was a call for level 1 evidence to compare metabolic bariatric surgery to non-surgical treatments, especially in people with class 1 obesity, BMI 30 to 35. And 12 of these have now been published. Most of them were initially started as small feasibility studies to plan the big trial that's never going to happen. So they are now the existing evidence base. I'm going to show you some examples of these studies, and we're going to sort of focus on the fact that they differ in terms of the proportion of people in them who had low BMIs. They differ as well with respect to diabetes severity inclusion and a couple of other factors. This is a summary slide of all the studies. I've circled on the left the different percentages of low BMI subjects. In the middle, you can see that these are small studies, 38 to 150 patients, but many now have been followed up to 5 years and beyond. And the remission criteria for diabetes varied as well, both the level of A1C and whether on or off medications. So let's look at a few of these. This is the SLIM T2D from Boston, Jocelyn and Brigham. They compared gastric bypass to an intensive weight management program, and this shows change in A1C over 3 years in their study, and you see about a 2% reduction in A1C, which is typical for gastric bypass. This is the Seattle's Crossroads study. It compared gastric bypass to a lifestyle program, and their definition of remission was A1C of 6 on or off medication, so they saw 60% remission in the surgical group at year 1. This three-armed trial is from Pittsburgh. It's called Triabetes. We compared a look-ahead lifestyle program to either band or bypass. This shows the three-year results. You can see the band weight loss is in between bypass and medical non-surgical treatment. This shows the three-year results from Triabetes, showing diabetes remission at years 1 through 3 for bypass, at year 3, 40% remission, 29% for the bands, which was kind of surprising, and none for the lifestyle group because the definition of remission here required an A1C under 6.5 off of all medications. So this is 5-year weight loss results from Triabetes, and that paper is under review, so those 5-year diabetes remission rates will be publishing soon. The largest of these randomized trials, though, was the Stampede trial. Stampede was important because the people that were randomized into medical intensive weight loss versus sleeve versus bypass had very high starting A1Cs over 9. And their definition or endpoint was a hemoglobin A1C of 6 on or off medications. So these are the 5-year, the longest term results out of Stampede. And you can see that in the bypass group, they did a little bit better meeting the endpoint of an A1C, 29% versus 23% for sleeve. And underneath, you can see those percentages go down when you include the requirement of no diabetes medications. Also, Stampede, this shows change in body mass index over time. The yellow line on top is medical, and then the 2 surgical procedures. There was a small but significant difference in change in BMI comparing bypass to sleeve, about 1.5 BMI points or about 4.5 kilo difference, with bypass having a little better weight loss. This looks at A1C comparing the medical treatment in general to surgical treatment, and what they found, there was no difference in change in A1C when you compared BMI above and below 35. The same was true, there was no difference in diabetes remission rates as well. This shows A1C over 5 years comparing sleeve and bypass. There was a very minor and insignificant difference in the change in A1C, but the number of people who were off of all their diabetes medications was higher among the bypass group than it was the sleeve group. So another really important multi-center metabolic surgery trial was the DSS trial. It was carried out in New York, Minnesota, and Taiwan. So it was multi-site. They had a triple endpoint of A1C, lipids, and blood pressure. And here they compared bypass to lifestyle. And you can see in the middle that almost 50% of the bypass group achieved endpoints compared to 19%. Here is their excellent weight loss at 5 years, and here is the number of people reaching the triple endpoint at 5 years, 23% in the gastric bypass group and 4% in the lifestyle group. And then finally, this is the Italian study with 5-year results comparing open bypass to open BPD, showing better remission rates with bypass, with BPD compared to bypass. So in summary, this literature has been put together as part of the Diabetes Surgery Summit 2, shows all of the studies here by ascending BMI level, and focus on the right, the PTO odds ratio is over 1 for all except one study that included a band which favors surgery over medical treatment. So this has changed the algorithm of treatment for people with class 1 obesity, such that if their glycemic control is poor, they now will consider metabolic surgery. So 4 of these small studies have now pooled together, Cleveland, Seattle, Boston, and Pittsburgh, into a trial called ARMS, the Alliance of Randomized Trials of Medicine versus Metabolic Surgery for Type 2 Diabetes, looking at long-term 10-year durability, safety, and relapse of metabolic endpoints, the largest randomized trial comparing surgery to medical treatment. But, you know, there is the need for evidence for health decision making and for public health beyond level 1 evidence and randomized controlled trials. So one more study, an example from last week, which leverages the Integrated Health Network for the HMO Research Group led by California. And they looked at surgical cases compared to controls in people who had obesity and diabetes. They were very well matched, and their primary outcome was time to incident macrovascular disease. And what they found was that at 5 and 7 years, there was a reduction in macrovascular events in surgical patients compared to non-surgical controls. So now that we've looked at all these studies, I do want to make an important comment that I think although these comparisons are common in the literature, I think pitting surgery against medical management really creates a false dichotomy. And surgical treatment has to include medical management, and responsible medical management needs to consider bariatric surgery. So just a quick word about safety and adverse outcomes. We've heard a little of them. These results show the early postoperative complications after gastric bypass and other common operations. So now that gastric bypass in particular is a very safe operation, we need to be more concerned about long-term outcomes. This shows in green from SOS the increase over time in anemia. So we know across the board with gastric bypass that anemia and microdeficiencies are increasing over time, and monitoring is definitely decreasing. In addition, there is the emergence of risk-taking behavior. This shows in labs after gastric bypass an increase in regular alcohol consumption and alcohol use disorders over time, rising to rates almost 20%. So in conclusion, you know, are we there yet? I think we've reached many summits in many areas, but there's more work to be done. I think we have to recognize from the data that it's not all about body mass index, both for selection for metabolic surgery or for any of the outcomes. And I think this shows the different variable weight loss trajectories after bypass in labs, and we see such divergence that is likely accounted for by differences in biology and genetics, behavior, psychosocial factors, and our environment. So I think before we can identify predictive phenotypes of this variable response, we're going to have to understand these factors better. And clearly, more work needs to be done looking at more complete, standardized, and long-term safety outcomes. We need cost-effectiveness studies. We need longer-term sleeve gastrectomy outcomes and comparative outcomes between the two most common procedures. And so with that, I will end where we started with Dr. Puri's study looking at the magic of diabetes remission after bariatric surgery. I think our next speakers are going to talk about the mechanism of that remission and understanding that better.